talk like a person, talk like a real human being, not as a business, a big anonymous business, right? But as a human being to another human being, with emotion. And it can be weird for people. It's a real mindset shift sometimes, but gains their trust so that you can then offer your solution as their solution. And then it feels natural and not forced.
Welcome to the B2B Digital Marketer Podcast, a podcast helping you to end your struggle with digital marketing, helping you to pave a new and better path to target and capture your ideal customer. Each week, we teach you how insiders and experts debunk the dreary and become engines of innovation. Now, here's your host, Jim Rembach.
Okay, B2B DM gang, we're going to have a good discussion today because I've already done some prep. We had to stop doing the prep because it got so good. And we want to make sure that we get the things that we had talked about on this interview and recorded so that we can share it with you. And I had that fun, and we're going to have fun, with Emily McGuire. Emily, welcome.
Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
Now, you and I, I have like four things that are going to expand as far as topics and discussion, but we're really going to focus in on modern email strategies for lead nurturing. Because in today's world, we're talking about, you know, the whole post-COVID new realities, I don't care what you want to call it. We're dealing with a lot of conditions and situations that we've never had to before. And you know what? They're not going away, right? But before we go into that, if you could share a little bit of background about your experience.
Yeah, so I've been an email marketer for about 8 years now. I started in the B2C space and then opened up my own consulting business about 4 years ago, and then rapidly expanded into B2B, tech, SaaS, professional services, plus still my heart in B2C, and made a lot of mistakes by sending thousands of email campaigns and testing a lot. And now I have transitioned into back to the full-time employment world, and I'm at AWeber now as their customer evangelist. They're an email service provider that focuses on helping small businesses harness the power of email marketing.
Well, and when you say small businesses, and you know, it goes into that category which you talked about, B2C, but you know, having a good understanding and experience with B2B is, you know, the commonality and all that, whereas we're still dealing with human beings. Last time I
checked. Exactly. Yep. Totally agree.
But it is very, very different when we start talking about a potential transactional relationship, like, hey, I need to get you to purchase something. All you have to do is whip out your credit card versus, hey, we have a solution that's going to impact your company and several people are going to be involved. And you know what? We have to go through and build a relationship, and there has to be an understanding of the problems to solve for, what it's going to take to transform, all those kind of things. It's a very, very different type of strategy.
Absolutely. I mean, because that sales cycle is so much longer and it takes a lot more nurturing than, like you said, 5 minute decision of, am I going to pay $20 today with my credit card? Right.
Too simple. So for us, we talked about what, you know, a lot of the things that you run into when organizations are struggling with their email marketing and they're not getting conversions. I mean, open rates continue to decline. I had a conversation with somebody the other day who he was saying how one of his, product or channel partners had like 60,000 emails and he gets like less than 1% open rate. And I said, well, arguably, you don't even have 1% opening because a lot of the systems today will open up an email and scan it, you know, and it looks like an open, but it really isn't.
Exactly.
So it's like, okay, when I shared that story with you, were like, well, I suspect, you know, that he didn't have or does not have a permission-based list. And I said, well, how do we know that? And so if you could give us a little bit of insight into the impact and effect of being permission-based versus not.
Yeah. So when I see engagement rates that low, that typically means that, you know, a couple of things might be going on. Mainly it's about the data, right? It's about the cleanliness of the list is what I've found in my experience. And so when I've had people come to me with very similar experiences. And when I go in and investigate, you know, most of their lists was purchased. And, you know, to me, that tells a lot, because that cold, you know, that's typically cold emailing, right? And when you're cold emailing in bulk, that is a really tough nut to crack, because it's so impersonal. And people get these emails all the time, right? And they don't even know who you are. Why are you showing up in my email inbox? Why should I care? And often what happens is those emails get marked as spam, which impacts your ability to land up in the inbox later and could even get you blocked from even getting into the inbox. So that's been my experience. And like I said, you know, these are people who may have never heard of you, who don't remember giving you permission to contact them. And so you are having to pound against a wall to get through to somebody technically and personally. And so getting people to give you their email addresses, giving you permission to email them, these are people who have already expressed an interest in you in some way, right? And taken some micro action with you, whether that's signing up for your newsletter or signing up for your lead magnet or whatever it is. And so capitalizing on that interest through really time-based email campaigns can be incredibly lucrative.
Okay, so if I understand what you correctly, and here's the things I think that have changed quite a bit. Like, for example, as you were talking, a lot of people will hear things about first party data, second party data, third party data, and you're really talking about getting that first party data with the permission based piece. But but a lot of people are sitting out there and saying, my email, you know, how do I even get to the point to where it's permission based? And it used to be, where from a strategy perspective, we would say that, you know what, you could have email out in front and you could be cold. But as you're talking, I'm like, maybe email has shifted in regards to our nurturing and our relationship and needs to be, you know, somewhere a little bit later in what we're thinking in regards to overall, you know, connection and relationship and touches with customers. Is that correct?
Yeah, I do not see email as a lead generation tool. I see it as a lead nurturing tool. Like, it is like catching that relationship when it comes in and then keep moving it down its path down the lead and then customer journey. And it really has that power to, like I said, keep following up with folks wherever they are in their journey and based on whatever data you're able to collect about them.
Okay. So then I'm sitting here and I'm saying, from an organizational perspective and looking what, you know, a lot of B2B organizations are, you know, just starving for leads, you know, and you have experts keep saying that, you know, email is the thing that converts the most. They're sitting there saying, but I can't even get any people on my list. You're saying, well, that's a different strategy.
Yeah, totally different strategy. And yeah, it's a big mindset shift for a lot of folks.
Yeah, because I mean, as you're saying that, and this is one of the things that we were talking about is, you know, things have changed so dramatically that it's now our new normal, whatever you want to call it. We're not going back, you know, to do the things. And so I have to make these shifts. And if I don't, other people are going to do it, and I'm going to lose my opportunities and maybe even go extinct. And I think that's, the stakes have gotten a lot higher, right? Because the leads have gotten so much more difficult to obtain. And people they could just shut us off easier than they can before.
Exactly.
And so, unfortunately, that may lead some organizations to do some underhanded activities. And so if an organization sit here and saying that email just doesn't work, right, what would you be telling them?
Yeah. So often, you know, when people tell me that they don't see email work for them, what I see is, you know, a data and analytics disconnect, right? And strategy disconnect. And so often when I come in and start talking, especially in the B2B world, people tell me they're putting out these newsletters regularly, throwing their best content in the email, and people just are not converting. And when I back up and look at, okay, well, what are your goals for your emails? You know, I often get blank stares. And so it's really about setting down that foundation of, okay, you need to set specific goals for your emails. Is it booking a sales call? Is it an email reply to whatever account executive sent out the email? Is it viewing your pricing page? Whatever that next step is on your customers through your sales cycle, you have to be guiding people that to that next step. And that is not giving them, again, 10 articles that you are asking them to pick and read and spend the next 5 to 20 minutes of their time reading. That's not going to nurture people down your funnel. So it's really about simplifying your emails, giving people the most relevant information they need, and then giving them a clear call to action on what that next step is, and then being able to track that. And that's the tricky part, is a lot of people don't invest in having somebody actually set up attribution to track the success of those campaigns.
So one of the things that you and I had talked about is how organizations will make some significant mistakes in regards to their ideal customer profile and connecting with them. And we're going to get into that in a second, because I want us to first talk about, from a strategy perspective, if I'm really wanting to lead nurture, and if my goals and objectives for my email efforts, let's just say that, you know, are to move people further down the sales process to, you know, making and choosing us as a provider of either a service or purchasing, you know, our particular solution, is I can't talk to everybody exactly the same. And I showed you a thing that we put together, an illustration that looks at, based on the relationship that we have with the customer, and part of that is touches, part of that is, you know, looking at the overall buy cycle, is that I should actually have several different funnels for, you know, communicating to them most effectively. Otherwise, they could become disassociated and feel like they're not important. Could you talk to that a little bit?
Yeah. And that's where, you know, we talked a little bit about content previous to this post, but, or to the call or the recording. And that's where, you know, really twofold here. One, understanding who your ideal customer is and their exact pain points, their challenges, and how your solution helps solve those challenges. I mean, really, it's a messaging thing, right? And not just saying, hey, we have this thing that's going to help you solve this problem, but saying, we know you have this problem. Here's how you solve this problem. And here's the product or service that solves it, right? And so understanding that from a messaging perspective, and again, you really need to know who your ideal customer is and get into their shoes to be able to do that. And the second part is being able to identify those folks in your email service provider, right? Whatever system you're using to send out emails. And so to do that, typically I recommend creating lead magnets and not like 50 page white papers, but something really easy to digest that is very specific to your ideal customer. And if you serve multiple verticals, making it specific to those verticals, so you know somebody downloaded this lead magnet or signed up for this or whatever it is, I know that they're in this bucket, right? And then you can start, again, really personalizing your messaging around pain points, challenges, and solutions to people based on that information.
Okay. This is very helpful. So I took some notes here, and and try to look at it from the conversations that I have with my clients about, you know, lead generation. So for me, I'm in front of this. A lot of the work that I do, it's the lead generation, and then we have to nurture it, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, because it's a relationship.
Yep.
You know, and the better and quicker that we do that, I don't want to say quicker, I need to be careful when I say that. The better we do that, the faster we convert, right, you know, to a sale. In addition, the better we do that, the more we can lock out our competition. So, okay. So I talk about retrospective engineering, meaning that, well, let's look at what we're trying to obtain. You said it from a email perspective. It's like, well, what do we want to accomplish with it? Well, our ideal customers have the same thing. They really got a problem they're trying to solve, right? So what is the problem that I want to solve? Here's where there's often a breakdown, and we all have this. We're all blind to it. It's a bias. It's a blindness bias that we all have. We don't see how all of these symptoms, call them pain points, you know, how all of these struggles, call them challenges, contribute to the problem that we're trying to solve for. And so what we have to do is to be able to tell stories to have them come to their own conclusions, to say, now I know why this is doing this, 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 and this, and this, and I have this problem.
Exactly.
And so then for us, as you think about it from a relationship perspective, then we can start talking about features and benefits that help to solve those particular problems. And people screw up that puzzle way too often.
Yeah. Yeah. They jump in real fast with, yes, like, here's the solution.
Yes. And we think that we can throw people over the river to solution and get them to solve their problem just by blasting a newsletter. Ain't going to happen.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. It's like you're expecting people to make a lot of, connect a lot of dots and do a lot of mental work to figure out whether or not they should become a customer, right?
Right.
By just giving them more information about their particular or just giving them content and information without any solution, or, you know, combining all those things, problem, solution, and your product or service.
So, I mean, for me, I often talk about how much water is in their well. I mean, and when we're experts at something, we have a ton of water in our well. But the fact is if we were to dump all of that water onto somebody, they would drown.
Yeah.
Right? So, you know, we have to really take that, you know, retrospection and that analysis to say, okay, my ideal customer profile has this, you know, these problems that we need to try to solve for. Oh, and by the way, going back to your historical evidence, you know, you talk about client success and all that. You know, if I can look at that client success and I can see the problems that they were trying to solve and how they did it, those are stories I need to be telling to somebody who I want to nurture along the way. I mean, absolutely. Again, it's a puzzle, right? But oftentimes we don't take the puzzle to do it and then therefore apply it tactically. So you had talked about, we need to take this strategy and convert it. We need to talk about these different funnels. You know, realistically, if I'm sitting here and I'm an organization and I need to get my hands around this because we know email converts, if I put it in the right place and do the right things, how long is it going to take for me to construct that, fix that? And then what does it take in order to operate something like that? Because here's what has happened in the past. Oh, well, that intern can manage that.
Yeah. Yep, I've seen that.
Yeah. So give us an understanding of what does it take in order to execute?
Yeah, I mean, well, first of all, you know, getting that big picture look, you know, having somebody dedicated to do that and carving out the space for them to do that. You know, I'd give them a month, right, to just look at and really go through, okay, what do we know about our customers, our ideal customers, their pain points, their challenges, all those things. What are our, you know, our primary verticals that we're serving, and how are we creating interest for people to join our list, i.e. a lead magnet, that's not only helpful to solve those pain points, but also easily digestible. It's not, again, a content dump. And I love that well metaphor, because that's what I really think about a lot of content marketing and newsletters, is it's drowning people in information, and it's not helpful because it's overwhelming. And then you have to start really mapping out how are people entering your email list, and then how do you want them to flow through it? And then there's going to be specific campaigns for each stage of their lead journey and very different goals for each stage in each most likely vertical you have. And then you have to execute it. So usually I have people focus on, you know, what's your most promising segment of your business? Let's start there. And so it's not, again, too overwhelming.
Yeah. Where have you had your most success, right?
Yeah, exactly. And so
with those ICPs.
Right. And so that can be, you know, depending on the size of your business and the complexity of it, that can be from a month to 3 month process, depending again on your complexity or how big of a bite you want to take out of it.
Well, and then it's not a set it and forget it. I mean, it requires, because you talk about data, right? I mean, somebody has to be able to analyze the data, do some interpretation and make some iterations. And that's an ongoing process.
Yep, exactly. And you have to set up the structure to create that process. Because again, often what I see is people are like, yeah, you know, we'll just look at the data at some point, or hey, can you pull that data for me? And it's like, no, that needs to be a regular process you're doing monthly to pull it and then analyze and iterate.
Okay. We may have breezed over this a little bit. I think we've kind of talked about it in, you know, some of the things that we have discussed, but if you could get a little bit more precise in regards to personalization of today versus what you see, you know, people doing that's kind of outdated.
Yeah. So, you know, personalization is always a hot topic in email marketing, but people typically think of it as is, you know, dynamic first name, comma, how are you today? You know, and that is one form of personalization, but how I see it and, you know, how I've seen it be most effective is again, breaking down your customer or your leads into what stage are they in your sales cycle? How or where do they need to be nurtured to that next stage? And then, you know, particular verticals, if you have them, you know, obviously being able to talk very specifically about their challenges and pain points in your solutions is gold. And so that's where I've seen personalization work really well. And not just like sending the right content to people in an email, but also talking to them like they are humans, because you are also a human. And so, you know, writing emails that aren't just, again, focused around education, but also that the emotional aspect of all of this, because that's what we're talking about is pain. We're talking about real pain, stress, anxiety, fear that people are experiencing that they're trying to solve for. And so being able to talk about that specifically to people at their nurture or their lead stage and their vertical is a gold mine.
Okay. So if I'm sitting here, you know, we have all heard, you know, the whole thing about story and storytelling, you know, you're saying that, but still it's that underlying strategy component that is the critical factor. So it's not just, because this is what people say, tell better stories, learn how to tell stories, but you're saying, no. I mean, yes, you have to do that. However, it has to be within this context and, or more importantly, construct.
Exactly. Yeah. Not any story is going to do it if it's not reflective of your ideal customer's experience, right? It needs to really speak in as much detail as possible to their situation. Because like we've talked about, there is so much content out there. There is so much digital marketing out there that is very broad and general. And the more you can be specific to someone's actual experience, the quicker you can connect with them and nurture that relationship.
Okay. So we had talked about the ICP, talked about, you know, connecting through the personalization piece. What are some of the, you know, you and I talked about how sometimes people are just don't even understand at all their ICP from a human perspective. So, you know, and we've kind of hit a little bit about, you know, story and, you know, that we need to align these things. But if we're talking about rethink, you know, we have to address, you know, there our entire strategy and change our tactics, you know, and one of the things that's a significant gap, you know, is your ICP awareness. How do you get people started to rethink?
Yeah. So a lot of, you know, people who've done these, you know, customer persona exercises or ICP profiles, you know, what I see a lot of people do is you list out criteria, you know, title, which are important, right? They are important, titles, lifestyle, whatever. But what I see them miss is the emotional aspect. Like, what are their real stresses? What are they worried about? What's blocking them from achieving their goals? And what are their highest aspirations? Because what, again, we often think that we are thinking creatures, that we make these very educated, rational decisions from buying, for our buying decisions, right? But we don't. We're emotional creatures. And we, you know, that's why those, you know, in-person networking, you know, people used to go to trade shows a lot, were so successful because you got to really have conversations and build those bonds with people. And that becomes an emotional exchange. And so to do that digitally and at a mass or a larger scale, you also need to be able to talk about people's emotions. What are their objections that you need to help them overcome? What are their fears? And really speak to that in your messaging, or it's just, you know, another statistic or guide or workbook that they're going to get, you know, whatever content piece you're putting out.
Well, as you're talking, one of the things that I have discussions with about most often, and when you hear executives who make decisions talk, they use this word a lot. And that word is trust. And so if I'm thinking about email, email has gotten to the point to where, quite frankly, we just don't trust it anymore. That there's always some type of hidden agenda. Like you had talked about, I didn't sign up for this. I don't remember signing up for this. I shared with you an example of a particular organization where I signed up once and I unsubscribed, but yet I keep getting emails and I unsubscribe, I keep getting emails. And what I think their strategy was to take my one sign up and then put me on four different lists. And so I'm sitting here and just continuing to unsubscribe. And then what it does, it prevents me from signing up from somebody else's list. Cause I'm like, I'm not going to be a sucker. Mm-hmm. You know, and I had shared with you a story of something that I was watching and people were talking about the stress of their inbox. And they were saying how they had, you know, 150 unopened emails, you know, 800 open emails. And what did I show you? Mine, which at this recording of this session is 47,772 unopened emails. That's psychotic, right? So how many do you think I'm not opening? Heck, I'm not even opening bills. It's, you know, somebody's telling me that my kidney's failing because of some test and I'm not looking at that either. It's, you know, and so you start thinking about this overwhelm in the inbox. It's like, dang, how do you ever gain trust? How do you ever nurture trust? Because ultimately when the day is done, if you start talking about nurturing a relationship to the point to where they're going to do business with us, it has to have an extremely high level of trust that is therefore nurtured all the way and then therefore sustained so that it closes. How do you do that in email?
Yeah. And I think that's where, again, being able to talk very specifically to people's experience and their industry, their role, and their pain points makes them think that you know them, right? And if you have done your research to actually get to know people, they feel understood. And that is building trust. But, you know, often, you know, people think of, try to take shortcuts with that. And so, and often because there is no real strategy behind it, right? So being able to talk again, like talk like a person, talk like a real human being, not as a business, a big anonymous business, right? But as a human being to another human being, with emotion. And it can be weird for people. It's a real mindset shift sometimes, but gains their trust so that you can then offer your solution as their solution. And then it feels natural and not forced.
Well, as you're saying that, I start, you know, thinking about, you know, we talked about the call to action, right? So if I'm thinking about trust and building trust, at some point I have to take it off of the digital. So it's like, you know, I kind of asked this question to you and I had a different perspective than what you initially answered, but I said, well, what happens when email doesn't work? And here's what I mean by that, meant by that, is that at some point, in order for us to start to validate, maybe even galvanize or continue to grow that trust, is that we have to make a personal connection and outreach. So it's not, you know, in that automated digital form and format. So a call to action, if you think about what I think about from a strategy perspective, is there's really two calls to action. One is, well, it may be their call to action and therefore they're doing something and taking an action, you know, because of whatever their desire and want. But then I also need to be looking at my call to action to say, well, because of what happened in email, now I need to pick up the phone.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. And that's another strategy to do with email, especially with the sales team, to be able to monitor people's interests, right? And you can do that with a lot of digital touch points. There's a lot of tools out there that'll help you do that. And find the right time to then nudge your sales folks to reach out. And then they make that very personal connection. So yeah, it's sort of an assist, right? It's a way to gauge that interest and try to start collecting digital signals of their warmth and sales readiness that you can then hand over to the sales folks.
Well, and as you're saying that, the importance of the training, and I don't want to shy away from saying scripting, but you know, how do you actually use that as that conversion so it seems personal? So I think there's a lot of guidance that would have to take place. So in other words, you know, based on what this client did with this email and subsequently, you need to call them back and you need to ask and talk about these things. I mean, are you guiding to that degree? To me, because I would almost think that would be needed, because, you know, otherwise whether it's a BDR, an SDR, or an account executive, you know, they're kind of blind going into this. And they need to learn how to pick up, you know, that immediately, so that it's not like an example where we call customer service and we tell them our problems and we could transfer the next person. They're like, tell me your problem all over again. You're like, what?
Yeah.
So that's upsetting.
Exactly. Right? Yeah.
So how do you actually take it? Because I mean, again, this is going into the strategy and tactical and taking things up to the next level. What do you advise clients in order to take it to that level?
Yeah. So, you know, again, depending on your tools, but there are some marketing operations that you can set up where, you know, you can do some contact scoring, or you can look at very high intent actions they're taking. So whether that's, you know, looking at a pricing page or the contact page, but they never contacted you, you can then set up, again, depends on your tools, actions where it can create a deal for your salesperson, and then give them a script or like a template of talking points, and let them know, based on this information or these actions they've done, this person is ready for this. So there are ways to do it. It's just, you know, digging into the tools you have and those, again, whatever your high intent digital actions people are taking through your email or on your website.
I think the important message here is to state that email doesn't stand on its own or alone.
Right. Yeah, it never does. It never does. Everything is always working in concert together.
But we like it to be that way.
I know. I would love for it to be that simple. I would love that, but it often isn't.
Well, then, okay. So then here's the lure, and oftentimes the sexy appeal of this is people will say, oh, well, we've got this new AI engine, you know, this artificial intelligence engine that's going to do this, this, and this, and help to automate it further for you. I mean, what are some of the truths and myths and fallacies in regards to AI and email and, you know, and lead nurturing?
Yeah. So there are a lot of, it's fascinating how many AI tools are coming out. Like there are a ton of copywriting tools, and I've tried some, and in my opinion, they're a good jumping off point, right? I think that they're a good like place to get inspiration and maybe some messaging structure to think about, but they often, in my opinion, lack the emotional piece, the personalization piece, because it always has to be personalized for your use case. Because every business is different, every organization is different, you have different tools, different processes, and different personalities. And so it has to all work for you. And so, you know, some of it might work, but in my experience, I've seen it more as like an inspirational tool to just see, you know, what can they do and how can I customize this to this particular use case.
Well, as you're talking, I start going back to that, you know, well, heck, we can just turn it over to the intern. What I mean, so it's like, I start seeing all kinds of risks associating it, you know, turning it over to the intern, you know, maybe even outsourcing it to somebody, heck, even if they know our industry, because we're talking about personalization. I mean, can you really outsource that? Can you really AI that? Can you really, you know, take your customer stories and convey them in a way by which it connects and nurtures? And I'm sitting here saying, that's a risky proposition when you start going down that path.
Yeah. And that's why, you know, when I was a consultant, that's what I did. I would go in and do that for people because, you know, sometimes you're so in your business, it's so hard to take that 1,000-foot view of, okay, what is it we're really trying to do? And then, but, you know, having an internal team that can operationalize these things, document things, like really dig into the research is really powerful, but they need to be empowered to do that with space and time and resources.
So I think overall what we're saying is that this ain't your mother's email anymore. It's now a higher level of sophistication that's required, an approach that's taken, and the seriousness that's involved with it is putting your company at stake.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, it has been around for so long. I think people still think of it as, you know, batch and blast emails. You're just spraying content out there to your list. And it's gotten so much more sophisticated. We're able to collect so much more data with, and you're able to tie it to a contact, an email address. And like, if that's not powerful, I don't know what else could be more powerful than that.
Well, I mean, to me, I think reality that everybody has to fess up to is to really say that, well, if you're, you know, customers and clients, prospects, whatever, however you have your buckets and what you want to use email for, is if they are not engaging, guess what? It is junk mail.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Agreed.
Oh man. Great discussion, Emily. I appreciate you sharing your knowledge and wisdom. So how does the B2B DM gang get in touch with you?
Yeah. So I hang out on LinkedIn. They let me on. So I'm a big deal. So I hang out there and I talk about email marketing all the time. If you want to connect with me there, I'm happy to. If you want to hear, learn more about AWeber, you can head over to our website, aweber.com.
Emily McGuire, thank you for sharing your knowledge and wisdom, and we wish you the very best.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Thank you for joining us. Go now to join the B2B DM gang in the B2B Marketer LinkedIn group, where you can connect with other B2B DM disruptors and get access to our B2B DM cheat sheets, checklist, and guides. While you're at it, if you found value in this show, please help by going to iTunes to rate, review, and subscribe. And share the show on all of your digital platforms. Be sure to tune in next week for our next episode. And always remember, you can automate your lead capture, but you must lure your lead.